You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, everyone. Chris Lopez here, and I want to welcome you to the Roundup Podcast for August 2018. I'm sitting here with Charles Roberts, and we're going to do our usual thing where we cover a quick update on the Denver market and then talk about a few recent deals. So this month, we actually have some interesting new data on the market, and we're going to talk about a buy and hold investment and a couple of house hacks. So Charles, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Chris.
All right. So Charles, you were telling me right before we went and hit record on this that you got a couple of really cool slides with some new data for what's happened in the market this past month.
Yeah, so everybody always wants to talk about the market, and I certainly do too. I taught at the Denver Metro Association of Realtors, DMAR, a couple days ago, and I wanted to pull up some information, some really fresh August information, it being mid-September right now, because we had something interesting come in the market, but as always, I want to put it in perspective. I don't want to blow it out of proportion, because it's very easy to say the market's going up, the market's going down, everything's changing. That's what everybody likes to say. I think it takes a much, much more mature person with a greater sense of context to say, hey, here's some data. Now let's look at it seriously. And obviously we want to be that person. So here's what I'm talking about. This right here is the single family, aka detached single families. And this is August data. So this is August of 18 versus a year ago. And what you will see is the inventory, which we think is a really important metric to follow, the inventory of properties for sale, went up for single family homes 8.64%.
And what were the rough numbers? What was the inventory last year? What's the inventory this August?
A year ago, the inventory at this same time snapshot was 5,634 single family homes on the market. And then this August, it was 6,121. So it's, like I said, it's all about perspective and which number you're interested in. In this case, it went up 8.64%. Will that start to change the market? Is this the beginning of the end, the end of the beginning? Who knows? I just want you to know you're going to be hearing about this. But the even more important number, the bigger, sexier number, if you will, is the condos and townhomes, the attached single families, because the inventory went up over 22% year over year. And that's a pretty big number. So a year ago, there were 1,726 attached properties on the market for sale in August. This year, there were 2,107. So there's another 300 or so this year, but it does equal 22%. And combined, this is the highest inventory we've had in 4 years. So let's say somebody was paying me to convince you, Chris, that the market has peaked. Somehow I am super motivated to take this data and convince you. Well, I would basically say 22%. That's a huge number. It is a big number. I would say this is the highest inventory in 4 years. Doesn't that mean that the market is going to slow down? It might very well. But when you do this for a while, you really understand that the problem is people take data out of context. And the fact is, I don't know if the market's going to slow down. I'm going to look very carefully at the next few months, and this might be a blip or it might not, and just come back and listen, and we'll tell you what we hear.
So when you're saying this is the highest amount of inventory, are you saying this is the biggest percentage increase, or just the total amount of homes and townhomes and condos available right now in the last 4 years?
The latter.
Metro?
Yeah, it is the latter. It's probably, I can almost guarantee it's both. that 22%, we haven't seen a 22% jump in attached properties in the last 4 years, can practically guarantee you of that. But what I actually mean is that this is the highest number of attached and detached listings there has been on the market in the last 4 years.
So out of, that's interesting data, as you said, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but with the other data points that RE Colorado releases, you and your Castle track, are there any other, you know, data points that are changing or have big differences like this?
No, not yet. I mean, you still see right here, if you look, for example, the sold price. So the average sold price in the last year went up another 9.16% for single families. And for condos and townhomes, it went up 9.17%. I mean, you can't ask for more consistency. However, if we have more inventory, one could expect over time a more balanced market, and price increases to slow down a little bit. Yes, that would be the economics 101 freshman year in college analysis of this data. The problem is we don't have the data yet. We've got 1 month where we had a jump in inventory. So when my clients come to me and say, oh, I heard about this. Should I buy? Should I sell? Should I do more in Denver? Should I do more in Cincinnati? The answer is none of the above. You're using data, in my opinion, completely incorrectly. You're thinking that you're smart because you're using data. The problem is you're using an insufferable lack of data to make a really important decision. And I think that the reason people listen to the stuff we do and the reason we teach all these classes is because we want people to make the right decisions. And if you make a decision based on a small piece of data, you have about a 50% chance of making the wrong decision.
So, I mean, just generally speaking, I know real estate is, you know, it's a slow moving market. And a lot of times you can't tell something's happened until you can look in your rearview mirror and months of data have happened. Just is there a rule of thumb you guys have or have determined analyzing data that, hey, after 3 months, 6 months, there's enough data to, you know, make it the definitive claim?
No.
That's it, just no?
That's it.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll take that.
All right. I'm going to tell you that no, that's the whole point. That's why it's at least 50% art and 50% science. Over time, well, let me show you. Okay, now here's where it gets really interesting. This is a slide that's one of my favorite slides, and I taught this also in the same DMAR presentation, because this gives perspective.
And what's, for those listening out there, what slide is this?
So what this is it compares the listings, the month-end active listings for every month going back from January 08, the number of listings on the market, to the number of sold homes. And what you see, if you're looking at it, is that back during the downturn in 08, we had 25, 26, 27,000 homes on the market. And we were selling between maybe 3 and 5,000 homes per month. Over time, 08, 9, 10, 11, 12, the number of listings dropped by a huge amount. But the number of sales stayed about the same, went up a little bit. 2012 was a bit of an inflection point where we really did go from a buyer's market to a seller's market. And since 2012, what we see is that we have an excruciating, amazingly low number of properties on the market, listings, compared to the number of sales. So when you ask like 1, 2, 3 months, 4 months, what I would say is, you know, I don't know. I mean, it went down. The number of listings went down over a number of years. And looking back, you can say, yeah, you know, that's what happened. But there were periods of time where the number of listings suddenly went up for 6 months. And I promise you, half the world thought the market was going to crash again. You got to be really careful with this data. Now, one of the things I want to point out, especially to the people who can see the chart that we're doing, is that right here we have, this is July here. This literally is August. So here's perspective. Now, one perspective is condos and townhomes just went up 22% in the number of listings.
Yes.
But if you look at it over the last 5 years, okay, it's up a little bit. But you wouldn't look at this and say the world's falling apart.
Yeah.
Nor would I say that with 22% the condos and townhomes going up, that everything's copacetic. What I would say is wait, listen, see what you want to do, but mostly make decisions on you, your timing, what you can control. Do not for a moment think you can predict the market. If you do think you can predict the market, call me. We'll have a really fun discussion. But I don't think you can. I'm going to challenge you. I can tell you after 20 years of doing this, I promise you I can't time the market.
And for those of you who are listening out here, I'll put this graph in the show notes. So just check that. You can click over and view it. But if you guys have been following our content or your castle's content for a while, you've seen this graph in Charles's real estate trends class. That's the one that, you know, shows great data. And it's interesting, if you were to show me this graph first, Charles, without knowing the percentage and the raw numbers of the listings, inventory of active properties right now, I would have not really even noticed anything. Oh, nothing's really changed. I mean, you can see it's just, you know, the amount of listings is just a smidgen higher on the graph. But looking at it visually, oh, you would just really, okay, well, it looks like, you know, it's about to, you know, the summers are going to start, you know, probably cooling off and turning down as what it normally does in the past. But now if you look at those other numbers, it's a lot more interesting how seeing or interpreting data can change your perspective. So it's very, very interesting on here. So, I mean, as far as just, you know, we're talking about, hey, there is a, I think we looked another chart about 1.5 more weeks of inventory this August versus mm-hmm. August of 2017. Mm-hmm. Does that change any advice you're giving to your clients right now where you're out there looking at properties running contracts?
No, it really doesn't. I except to say, do not buy or sell or invest based upon a headline in the Denver Post. Not that the Denver Post is saying something wrong. I believe that more often than not, it's we who interpret data incorrectly. So Denver Post has to sell papers. Great. They're going to say, you know, 22% jump in attached listings. And that is absolutely true. But no, it doesn't really change anything. And I will tell you, from my perspective, the best thing you can do is over time, you know, dollar cost average. If you want to buy some stuff, make a plan, a 5 or 8 year plan to buy a few properties or do whatever makes sense. Just don't whipsaw back and forth based upon the latest webinar or podcast or, you know, Zillow article. We're just talking about data. It's up to the listener or to interpret the data. And if you're a real estate agent, to hopefully advise your folks so that they do the right thing for them.
Great. All right. So let's jump into a couple of deals that we closed last month, Charles. And I know you're pulling up those, the first one. And this, just give everyone some background. This is for a buy and hold investment property. So just a client looking to buy a rental property and just rent it out.
Yeah. So this was a property that we went and looked at. We've been looking for a few months for just a, you know, a simple buy and hold long-term rental. This is 2062 South Helena Street. Real nice looking complex. You know, all the properties looked good. It was great. They were asking $210,000. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,140 square feet with a unfinished basement, if I remember correctly. Just, you know, simple stuff. Let's see, had a 2-car attached garage, so that was nice. And one of the interesting things was it had a $160 monthly HOA.
Wow, you don't see them that low very often.
Right, and there was a reason for it. And I will give Brian, our client, the credit because he actually figured this out before I did. And I, when Brian told me this, I'm like, you got to be kidding. I have never seen anything like this in Denver. It turns out that this HOA does not cover what you think HOAs would cover. It doesn't cover the exterior siding and doesn't cover the roof. And he looked up on Google Maps and he could see different color roofs where individual owners had actually replaced their roofs. So
what does the HOA cover then?
It covers the clubhouse. It has a clubhouse for God's sakes, but they don't cover the exterior.
Like a real clubhouse, like a nice clubhouse, not just like a
let's
a
say
room.
Yes.
I mean, I'm saying, but actually it's like a physical clubhouse.
Yes.
Okay.
Common area, grounds, maintenance, and the grounds were beautiful. Like it's just, and I've asked around because I was, you know, a little bit embarrassed to not have actually thought about this. I don't know anybody who's ever seen something like this outside of properties that have been partitioned with party walls and little fourplex. It's just weird. I mean, you look at this picture here, it's a nice looking picture. I mean, this is a pretty nice looking community. It's just, this is the way they did it.
And what year was it built? I mean, does
it was built in 1983.
Okay.
And the HOA covers, like I said, the clubhouse, common area, grounds maintenance, a pool. The damn thing has a pool, sewer, snow removal, trash removal, and water.
So all the normal stuff except for the roof.
Yeah, except for the exterior. Right. And that's, and then it also impacted the insurance. So we just had to make sure that we were okay with this.
Oh, how much did that change the insurance?
The insurance went up. It was like owning a single family home.
Right? So it went up to like a,
what? Yeah, and I'll show you what it was. Yeah. Huh. So oftentimes we say, well, just don't hate on HOAs until you understand an HOA and where the money's going. One of the values of an HOA is, you know, 99.999% of the time, your insurance is much lower because the exterior is covered. In this case, no, the HOA is very low priced, but you're making up for it with a higher insurance payment. But it made sense for Brian. It was a solid cap. I'm going to show you the numbers. And we moved forward and we picked it up.
So, and this property, was this in Denver or Aurora?
This was in Aurora.
Okay.
Yep. Out of curiosity, why?
I just couldn't remember you saying what it was.
Yeah, I was just thinking that I missed something.
Name, and I don't know that name of that street, so I wasn't sure if it was Denver or Aurora.
Yeah, I'd clearly never done this complex before. And I will, you know, just look next time. There was just, I'm telling you, there's just nothing about this place that would have telegraphed that the HOA didn't include that. But
Google satellite images is what...
you can see the roofs. You can see different color roofs.
That's so interesting.
It is interesting. Okay, so that's the property here. It was a great deal. We actually... it was very, very competitive. And I'll let you know at the end of the day what we got it for. We put it under contract, and then we ended up getting it for $223,500.
And what was the original list?
$210,000.
Okay.
And we actually went higher than negotiated down on some work. And I think, Brian, I think he put in about $3,000 into it. So let me just put that here. So it's all kind of apples to apples kind of stuff.
So there were multiple offers on this?
Oh, yeah. There were multiple offers. Yeah. And we squeaked through.
Like, I mean, a dozen?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I think I knew definitely multiple.
Okay.
It was very competitive, you know, for something like this. I will tell you, though, that I'll bet you everybody didn't realize what we didn't, what I didn't realize until Brian pointed it out. I tell you, it's so, I want to go with unique to say that an HOA that looks this nice, not having the exterior covered, I think people would have found out the hard way why the HOA fee was so low. But, you know, Brian figured it out, we got it. So we paid $223,500 for it, put some money into it. He put 20% down. I think it was about 5.25. He actually, you know, had done what I suggested. He went to Craigslist, go Section 8. I think he said he had a renter already set within a day or two of closing, something like that. We had projected $1,800 for rent. I'm not sure if he's actually got them. We just closed this a couple days ago, but I'm pretty comfortable saying I think $1,800 was market rent, something like that. Maybe a little higher. My guess would have been maybe a few dollars higher versus lower, but $1,800 is a good shot at it. And you'll see here, let's see, that we have the numbers here, have the numbers. You know what? I got to take this back right here because this actually went up.
So he's, I think he's this was pointing more, to the, property insurance right
looking
now.
Looking at taxes and looking at the insurance.
So taxes are $1,182.
Yep.
Insurance for the year is about $1,000.
Yep.
Repairs and maintenance about $700.
Because it's in pretty nice shape and the HOAs were $1,920. So the whole thing just made sense as a pretty simple property that was in a nicer area, just nice outside. So the cap rate is going to be lower, meaning less cash flow, than a similar complex in a tougher area. Not as nice to look at outside, not as green, not as vibrant, but this was a good quality property for this client, for the, what they wanted to do. So it all made sense. And then we come over to the cash flow here, and you see that this had a cap rate of a 7.
Wow.
Which is sort of right? Like, doesn't that sound familiar? You know, we keep saying the stuff we're getting, high 6s, low 7s, occasional mid 7 cap rate, cash on cash return, and a cap rate of a 7, you know, for a nice quality property.
Now, during the due diligence and the, you know, as you're going through the contract, any issues that popped up during inspection? Because I know you said he had to put in a couple grand for repairs, right?
So this was, they had polybutylene piping.
Say that 3 times fast.
Yeah, polybutylene piping. So that was something that we negotiated because, you know, the buyer basically didn't want polybutylene piping.
What?
So we knocked off. I'm trying to remember. I think we knocked off like $8,000 or something off the price.
Now, I remember, I think it was Justin Cooper bought a place with that type of piping. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Because I will butcher it. And I know Justin has a little bit of background in plumbing. I know nothing about plumbing. What is it? What's the pros? Like, obviously, what's the cons?
You know,
negotiating when I do even know the details of it?
Basically, what happens is that... my understanding is that it's the connections that can fail. And if it fails, if a connection fails, it can flood. So this buyer is actually a contractor, knows a lot about this kind of stuff, and said no, and he actually got it all fixed. And he fixed it up pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. And so this was just in, was it the whole complex or is his unit?
No, in the whole complex it was like this. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
But he got the stuff that would affect his property and potentially flood his thing here. Okay.
And can you do me a favor? Can you actually switch the screen over to your side for a second? Is that something you can do? Let me know when you're done. I actually want to go in and just check the final settlement statement because I want to make sure I'm not missing something. But I feel like I shouldn't do that, you know, like in front of billions of people.
So if don't go yet.
Okay, I won't.
All right, Charles, you are
okay. So
free
just
to
keep
click
on
away.
Talking. Give me 15 seconds while I check something out here.
Okay. Yeah, so when Charles says he's pulling up the final settlement statement, this is the document after that you get from the title company at closing with the final breakdown to the pennies on every single expense, income, and the breakdown of where every single thing went. So he's just checking a few numbers right now to talk about this property.
Yep. One more second. Okay, I take it back. There was something I had forgotten about. So we paid $223,500 for it, but we also got a $5,000 seller credit.
And that was for the piping?
Yep, exactly. So I'm wrong about my numbers. If I have it right now, it was actually basically $218,500?
Because we had a $5,000. Can I pull up your screen
again? Yep, you can pull up my thing. So I think it was $218,500. So I apologize doing this in real time. But if you look at it like that, we're just pulling up the screen now.
We're trying to anyway.
All right.
Great. And then, so I just changed this to 218.5, which I think is actually the right number. And this was a 7.2 cap. Just made it a little bit better, but right in that kind of sweet spot. And this was good.
It's nice when the mistake in numbers is...
Yeah, and that was just my mistake. I forgot. I was thinking as I was going through this, no, wait a second. We got actually a seller concession as well, and that was the seller concession. Yep. So just a solid, you know, low 7 cap for a really nice area that was, you know, eminently rentable.
And just to, I know, I think this was Brian's first rental property purchased, and I know we'd put in a couple offers in other places. And we got a lot of people out there listening and watching that are looking to buy their first rental property. Any takeaways you can kind of take away from, you know, Brian's experience of buying, putting offers in that you can just highlight, help other people out there with either pulling the trigger or getting something under a contract?
So I'm not a pull the trigger kind of guy. Like you hear that, like, you know, just sort of dive in and pull the trigger. Like I'm a really big patience kind of guy. And I think I appeal to people who have patience and I really respect people who have patience. If anything, I think we started looking like 6 months ago and, you know, and he had a baby in the meantime. It's like, great, take your time, have a baby. You know, I would just say perseverance, like have a plan and execute on the plan and don't, you know, don't get ahead of yourself and don't be like the tough guy who had the greatest deal. I just over and over and over again, I see the mature people who can make a good business decision, who are in it for the long term, who, you know, analyze it, but don't analyze it to death, who look at properties, but not obsessively look at 200 properties, just kind of be normal and then think long term. And if you buy stuff for the long term, you're going to have some good years and bad years. But I think in the end, you're going to be really, really happy you did. It's just it's that simple in a sense.
And I mean, that's something, you know, one of my personal things is just patience in the long term. And, you know, whether you buy something in August 2018 or of May of 2018, come August of 2041, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, that perspective of thinking long term, and that's why, Chris, you and I do this because, you know, I've been a flipper. I've done lots of flips. You actually did one 6-9 months ago, right?
Actually about a year and a half ago.
It's been that long. Okay. Well, you've done a flip more recently than me, but what are both of our personalities are more geared towards long-term building wealth over time. And that doesn't mean you, the listener, whether you're an agent or a client or want to do something that, you know, do what you want to do. But what I want to do is build wealth over the long term. And what I found is all the money I made was doing stuff patiently over the long term. And that's what I counsel on.
So move on to the next deals to talk about. You know, we were recording this on a Monday. And basically on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we got three house hacks under contract.
Was one on Friday and two on Sunday.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah.
So just... First of all, Charles, I think most people know what a house hack is, but what is the 30-second definition of a house hack?
So what we call a house hack is you want to be an investor and you also need a place to live. So buy a place, live there, and then rent out part of it. A very typical is buying a duplex and then renting one side, living in the other, or buying a single-family home and renting out the basement, or buying a townhome and having three bedrooms and then, you know, choosing one bedroom and renting out the other. When I was in my early 20s, that's exactly what I did. You know, I wasn't the investor. I was just a guy who was renting a property that was owned by friends of ours, you know, the house hacking. So it's that simple. It's buying a place with the big, big, big advantage is that you don't have to put 20% down. You basically can put down 5% and figuring you have to live somewhere. Okay, just live in your unit. And the disadvantage is, guess what? You have permanent guests now. You have people living in your unit. But hopefully they're mostly paying off your mortgage.
And if you guys have never looked at the numbers of this, that year or two or a couple years of sacrifice of living with your tenants, I personally think, you know, the long-term benefits of the cash flow and the appreciation building up a rental portfolio, man, it can far outweigh the couple years of inconvenience. And, you know, really it's, you know, for most people, it's a step up from what they did in college for, you know, for 4 or 5 years. So, you know, it's not horrible. It's just, you know, you are trading a little bit of inconvenience for some really cool long wealth building advantages there. So, Charles, let's talk about the first one. And we're going to give a really quick overview of these three properties and what we found them because they are actively under contract. And, you know, we'll go into more details next month or the following month as we get these closed out. So, Charles,
yeah,
so the first one was yours.
The first one was mine. And again, we're not going to give the addresses. I'll give rough numbers, but, you know, just to sort of hide the innocent, we'll talk about this in the next month or two. Some will close, maybe some won't. You know, we'll just talk about all the stuff. But one was a duplex on the east side of town, just south of Colfax, just west of Aurora. So a Denver neighborhood, nice place. It was a duplex I was asking about, $450. We got it under contract at right around that price. My buyer was a VA, came in with a VA loan, you know, putting a small amount, like 3.5% down, and actually had met the owner who actually lives there. The owner asked, hey, would you mind if your buyer comes back? I'd like to speak to him. There were 7 offers and they took our offer. He really appreciated my guy being a veteran and also wanting to live there.
So the seller actually asked
his listing agent to ask me if the buyer would mind going back and just hanging out with him for a while.
Just have like a cup of coffee and
absolutely,
chit-chat?
Absolutely. And I was all for it.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, I feel very strongly that agents screw up more deals than we save. And as much as we can get out of a deal or get back off when the buyer and the seller should talk, that's an opinion that is not shared by a lot of agents. And I respect other agents. I can just tell you over and over and over again, when the buyer and seller want to talk, I've seen good things happen. That's been my experience for years and years. And I was thrilled. I was thrilled when the listing agent said, hey, what do you think about this? I'm like, dude, that's great. Have them talk. Like, just have them talk. They're human beings. And they ended up accepting our offer, which was very much lower than other competing offers. His guy liked my guy. That's great.
So it's one of those things where it's not just purely based on the numbers or, you know, the number written on the offer, on the contract, but also that the relationship, the personal touch, and it still comes down to like people do business with people they like, they know, they trust, that type of thing.
Go figure. The world hasn't changed in eons.
So we will dive into that in more details next month or the following month because you don't hear too many duplex house hacks, right? Sorry, you don't hear too many duplex investments right now whatsoever other than us kind of saying, yeah, there's not too many duplexes. So we'll definitely dive into that because that is, you know, outside the normal scope of what we're seeing right now. And this next one, Charles...
This was a six-bedroom in Arvada. So I'll talk about the one I saw. You talk about the one you saw. And both of these we got under contract yesterday. The one I saw was just a nice-looking ranch. I mean, we walked in, and within seconds, the buyer said, I want this. I'm like, okay, great. Let's look at the house. You know, like we're kind of joking with each other. But I'm like, wow, this was really nice. It was a nice neighborhood in Arvada. And it was in great condition, wood floors, 3 bedrooms on the first floor, good-sized kitchen. Full bath. And then we walked downstairs, you know, like 7.5-foot ceilings, like just lots of space, 3 full bedrooms, a full bath, like good sized bedrooms, another living area, a full bath. And I swear to God, a kitchen with stainless appliances. It was like beautiful. We couldn't believe how nice this was. I will say that the basement bedrooms did not have egress windows. So we talked about that. And I told him, you know, if it's me, I'm putting egress windows in here. You know, if I'm putting tenants down there, absolutely. Figure about $10,000 for 3 egress windows, something like that, to make them legal.
So 3 bedrooms downstairs and each bedroom does not have an egress
window. Correct. Would require an egress window somewhere in the range of about 10,000 total for the three windows.
Okay.
Yep. And then we went back upstairs and we looked at the backyard and it's like, oh my God, this is like a beautiful backyard with like beautiful lawn. The place was just great. So we put in a, Oh, we actually went above asking price. We went a little bit above asking price. And the buyer would have gone a lot higher. So we talked about it and I called up the listing agent. It was a great situation. The listing agent picked up. Great. We're talking on the phone, on speakerphone. I'm asking him what's going on. He said he had been told he'd have an offer, but was honest, didn't have it yet. We came in with an offer above asking, just perfect offer, clean, ready to go, owner occupant, strong lender letter, invited the listing agent to call the lender, you know, just did all the little things right. We got it under contract and we're really, really happy with it.
Great.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I went out with one of our clients and just saw another, just sounds like a very similar property to what Charles just talked about, a great property. So another gentleman looking to house hack. He's actually already got another one. He knows the drill. And we had scheduled, we'd wanted to see four properties that day. Two we couldn't. And the first one we saw was a very interesting property. It looked like the current owner had bought it. It was like a bi-level home where you would normally, you know, come in through the front door and then you could either go, you know, up half flight of stairs or down a half flight of stairs. And what the current owner did was actually close off the two sides. So if you basically went upstairs, there was an exterior door, went downstairs, exterior door, and basically turned into an up-down duplex. The place definitely, you know, needed some work from the outside. There was that like yellow caution police tape along the sidewalk going up to the front door because I didn't see any major, you know, obstructions or danger points there on the lawn, but they just had the yellow tape up there. And, you know, the listing instructions, the showing instructions, so we couldn't see the upstairs unit. So we went down, we tried to, you know, unlock the exterior front door, walk down the stairs. And then we unfortunately just scared the living daylights of this poor tenant down there. And I had scheduled showing like 3 or 4 days in advance. And I guess the showing instructions went to the owner. He accepted, but never translated it down to the tenant. So we couldn't actually see the properties. But you know what? That's the way it goes sometimes. So we sat there trying to make a few phone calls to the listing agent. He was out of town, couldn't see it. So just went on to the next property. And this one is in North Glen. So right off of 25, but just a great family neighborhood. And I didn't realize this until I printed off the listing that day, just have the notes with me, that they'd actually had an open house that day as well. And when I'd scheduled the showing, I don't think there was an open house listing. So we, I think, arrived right around like 1:30 or 2 o'clock, right at the tail end of the open house. So a couple good things. This property was gorgeous. Like I said, great neighborhood, great outside. And the previous owners had all, I think, done some work to it. You walk in, I mean, just gorgeous upstairs. I think it was 3 bedrooms and 2 or 3 baths upstairs. And then, you know, normal kitchen, dining room, all in great shape. And then what they did is the stairs going down, they actually put up a piece of drywall, put it up, mudded it, painted it. And so there's just stairways leading down to nowhere. They were just using it as like storage. And then they kind of divided the upstairs to the downstairs. So upstairs looked great. We walked around, saw the downstairs, has its own separate entrance that you can get to from, you know, just the gate coming up from the driveway. So separate entrance upstairs, separate entrance downstairs, all looks great. Then downstairs, there is a small kitchen down there. And then there's 2 bedrooms with the potential to add, you could probably add like 3 more bedrooms down in this basement. It is just huge. And so just a great layout, and ended up being able to talk with the owners because they were there at the open house. So had a nice chat with them for like 30 minutes, left. Our clients really liked the place. And then later that night we put an offer in, and Charles, you wrote the offer on there. I mean, any tips for how we got accepted so fast?
You know, boring is good. Just a
boring is good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just a really clean, straightforward offer. I can tell you, I have a lot of listings. I took on a listing yesterday. I didn't even tell you this. And We listing folks want to work with simple, straightforward, professional people. I cannot overemphasize how important it is to write an offer that protects the buyer in every way, but to understand a contract so that you don't put repetitive things. So in Section 30 is additional provisions where the buyer gets to pretty much write whatever they want to write. What you want to be careful is to like not go repeating everything that's in Section 2 and 14 and 34. Like clean offers are so important. And you know, it was a good, solid offer. It was a little bit above asking, if I remember right. But once again, just straightforward, 30-day close, lender letter, invitation on a Sunday to call the lender who would talk about a pre-qualified buyer who's ready to go. Like, the secret is there's just no secret. Write a good, straightforward offer and work with someone, if you're a client, who knows how to do that. And if you're an agent, understand this is where you should put your time, is how to write a good, straightforward offer that protects your client, but also is appreciated by the seller and the listing agent.
I chuckled, Charles, when you said the word boring, because that is, if you recall, when you did your Bigger Pockets podcast, it was titled The Boring Path to Real Estate.
Right.
And I remember you weren't thrilled about that title.
I must have said it, right? Like, I must have said it at some point, because they actually came up with that. I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of funny. But the truth is, it's really true. Like, all the crazy guru stuff you hear about, don't send me that contract. Like, don't think you're going to outsmart me with a contract. It's just going to piss me off. I'm going to hand it to the seller and say, let's not work with this one. Let's work with that one. It's amazing what a difference it makes, and how I think a lot of agents totally understand that. But if you don't do this day in, day out, obsessively, 80 hours a week, you might not appreciate how important it is to write a contract that way.
All right. So any final thoughts on the rental property or the three house hacks?
You know, time marches on. You know, I mean, you know, people ask constantly, what should I do today? Did something change? And years and years and years go by, and we do the same thing. We put our heads down, we work hard, we get up at 5 a.m, and I think you should too, whoever's listening, whether you're a buyer, an agent, or an investor, or a seller, or whatever you're doing. More often than not, it's the hardworking people with integrity and maturity who actually make money in real estate. And I think, speaking for both of us, that's why we like it.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking and emailing back and forth at 6 a.m. this morning, going over a couple details.
Yeah. Well, you got up late. Yeah, I had to wait for you. So.
A little jab, jab, jab there, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, we will start wrapping up this month's Roundup webinar. As you can see, we're still finding good properties out there, the right properties that fit what clients are looking for. So if you've got any questions on buy and hold investments or house hacking properties, please reach out to myself, reach out to Charles. Our contact details are on the Denver Investment Real Estate website. And if you want to learn more about house hacking, we've got a good amount of content on the website. We're also starting to teach classes regularly at the Yearcastle office. Come there. It's great to learn and great networking. And we will keep you up to date over the next, you know, one or two webinars as these three house hacking properties play out. All right. So, Charles, thank you for your time today. And we're not there. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Thank you.